Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550. Gonna be that in
an hour. Well, I've been paying attention to it pretty much all day and noticing it and texting and tweeting. Well, not tweeting. Yes, I guess I did tweet about it once. The smoke-filled, orangey skies above Western New York. And yet, I walked in here. I used to be able to walk in here at 1:30. Now it's got to be like 2:56, no earlier, because the room is occupied. And I fell for it. Like, why aren't the lights on? Why aren't the blinds open? But it turns out everything was on and open. It's just like dark outside, kind of. So we'll get past it. I'm excited about today. I wish I were more excited about England and Argentina, but alas, France took me out of that pool, and now it's just like depressing. I know that that's lame, right? I like the World Cup. I liked it before I could bet on it. I liked it before survivor pools and, oh, a man's down. What do you know? Just looked up and saw somebody rolling around. See, what was that? Was that just bitterness from losing on France yesterday? Oh, of all the teams to lose on, the favorite. But that's life. So, yeah, I mean, I thought I was in good shape in this pool and needed for that to work out, England to win. And I would have been, you know, super distracted like I was yesterday to a point. But Spain got up when I was talking to Sneaky Joe in the first segment and really... from then on, it was never that interesting. But anyway, that's how that goes. Winner today goes to the final on Sunday in New York. And I guess there's some thought that our skies today will be theirs this weekend. And that could be a problem. I mean, it seems like a ways off, 4 days off. But it's what I read. So maybe that's something to think about. I'll talk to Paul Hamilton today. The Sabres have announced their opening night. It's a Saturday this year, October 3rd against Chicago. Bowen Byram's Chicago Blackhawks. And before that, they'll open their season on the 1st against Columbus. We'll talk about some other Sabres stuff as well with Paul. I'll bring on a guest who you've not met yet, Ryan Paganetti, at 4 o'clock. I heard Ryan on a podcast with Scott Barrett of Fantasy Points talking about his career. He's been an analytics director or director type in a few organizations, and I just woke up one morning to this podcast where he and Scott were talking about how Ryan worked for the Eagles when they won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles and the Philly Special and all this. Like, who is this guy? And so at the moment, he's not with a team or in the league office, but he's building a social media presence and seems really impressive. So, you know, if you may know, that's a big area with me, and I kind of want to know some origin story stuff and maybe where we're at, what place in time we're at here. What is that? Like almost a decade ago, Philadelphia, and they didn't invent a lot of that stuff. They were a team famous for trusting it and they were rewarded. So anyway, Ryan will join me in about an hour. And it's Pick 10 Day, the final, already, the final, fourth and final one of these for our season in golf, where we rotate, taking turns, picking 10 players, one of whom the deal is you need to win the upcoming major championship. This week it's the Open Championship, this week it's my turn, and Brian will be on, and I think also Bulldog will call in, and that'll be at 5:30 for the golf picks. I'm mostly done. I know Chris last time was like done. He had picked that Kepka, I'm 54, that Kepka like weeks in advance. That time, actually, that was the Open, and it was Kepka, I think, who had some injury. And we left it so that if he were hurt and didn't tee off in the morning, that Bulldog could replace him with someone else, and I just jokingly threw out the name Padraic Harrington. Well, Padraic Harrington won the Senior Open, the U.S. Senior Open, like a week or two ago. I think he won the year before also. It sounds like he's maybe killing it on the Senior Tour. He has won the Open Championship at this golf course, Birkdale, which is the second most frequent host of this tournament. And I'm a little bit keen to it, Harrington. Like, could he win? He probably won't, but it's a fun long shot idea, and I like my long shots. So some hockey, some golf, some football, and whatever else comes up through the day. Bet Online today sent out quarterback stats, prop bets. And here are the numbers on Josh Allen. And I'll leave the one that I think I would, I'm stubborn. The one I think that I would play first for last. So keep in mind with these, when they put out season-long prop bets, that it pretty much, you want to remember that not everybody's going to play 17 games. In fact, Allen, who hasn't missed a start in years, doesn't really even play 17 games because he plays one play the last 2 years in the last one. But, you know, injuries, and there's probably some threshold. I don't know. There's probably some threshold that players need to clear for the bets to be valid. But the numbers are going to be lower than if you add up single game projections or like other years, just because if Allen were to miss a month or something, that could decide the bet. So here are the numbers on him. Passing yards, 3,600 and a half. So that would be his lowest total in 7 years. Again, keep in mind that injury point. And it's not by much. Last year was 3,668. 2024 was 3,731. So it's within 100 to 150 yards, passing yards, from the last 2 years, this number. Are you thinking, I mean, you know, if you are a gambler and want to play some of these, of course you can. Are you thinking, just whether you are or not, that Allen is in position for a bigger passing year? That has been my vibe here for a while. And that comes from different conversations that I've had and that we've had with different analysts and ADP chasing on Tuesday nights, last night, different. I talked to Matt Collar today on his Purple Insider podcast. You know, the point Warren Sharp made on this show a couple of weeks ago. Look, the Bills might have to chase more because of their schedule and or because of maybe their defense isn't as good. Doesn't have to be down, but people are going to predict that. So if that's right, you would think you'd see more passing, and maybe then you get Allen back up into the 4,000-yard territory. I mean, even 4,000 yards, if you take out his first 2 years, first year he played part-time because he had that elbow injury in Houston. He started game two as a rookie, right? The big plan that Nathan Peterman won the job and then couldn't even make it to the third quarter of the opener. Okay, well, that was worth a lot. And then Allen, the next year, played them all. He's played them all ever since, pretty much, except for the occasional final game of the season meaninglessness. And so since 2020, 6 years ago, he has been about 4,300 yards or more the first four of those years, and then down pretty sharply the last two. Attempts down as well, naturally. And, you know, why is that? Diggs was gone. That changed things a lot. He didn't have an elite number one receiver anymore. Far from it. And then you had Cook pop, leading the league in touchdowns, leading the league in rushing, positive game scripts. You just didn't need Allen to be as prolific throwing the ball. So a sharp decline the last 2 years from the previous four in terms of his yardage volume as a passer. So 3,600, to me, given Warren's point, the schedule, the game script stuff, seems pretty modest. If I were to bet that, I would bet the over on Allen. Just really, that's entirely why. It's thinking that they might need him to do that. And if they do, shouldn't it work out? I mean, no matter what you think of the Bills receiving core, if they need Allen to throw 40 passes a game now because they're losing, or whatever it is, then you would think that that wouldn't go so badly. I think interceptions would tick up, and that's another one. So he threw 10 last year, and this year's line is 10.5. So I think I would go over on his yards, over on his interceptions, and then maybe also over on his touchdowns. 24.5 touchdown passes would be, 24 would be his lowest, again, since 2019. Really, we're looking at, statistically, in the betting markets, we're looking at Josh Allen in a new way, where he's more, not quite game manager, won't go that far, but not the pinball machine numbers, some of them anyway, from, say, 5 years ago. So, modest lines on passing yards, passing touchdowns, 24.5, interceptions, 10.5. Last year, touchdowns, he had only 25, his lowest in 6 years. They're all, everything's his lowest in 6 years. And then you have rushing yards at 500.5. And so for some perspective on that, that's a little bit under the last 3 years. It's well under the 2 years before that. I mean, look at the monster seasons, 21, 22. But working backward, the last three seasons in terms of rushing yards for Josh Allen, 579, 531, 524. They're offering you 500.5. You can't know if he's going to miss time. If he doesn't, and it's consistent with how he's played, that would be another over. I would be reluctant to do it. I have always been, I mean, it's never been successful, shy about betting overs on his rushing, because I think we see a day where that is curtailed, and that can be from the other reasons, have to throw the ball more to stay in games. Probably don't want to sound too dramatic about that, but it could be different this year. And just sort of the natural progression for a quarterback who's rushed as often as Allen has. If he has a normal year in the rushing category, he'll maybe get to 1,000 carries for his career. And then you have the touchdowns, which I cannot quit as a stat. Talking to Sal about it on Monday, any chance I get to marvel at Josh Allen and rushing touchdowns, I'll take it. Because it's just incredible that he ranks as high as he does in NFL history already as a quarterback. I mean, if you had a running back, if it were whoever, James Cook, or, you know, James Cook who has been here for longer, or McCoy or somebody else, if the Bills had a running back who in the last 8 years had totaled 79 touchdowns, almost 10 per season, I mean, that's record stuff, and they have it in Allen. In addition to everything else he's accomplished, this year's line from Bet Online on his rushing touchdowns is 11.5. And I just can't. It's not on par with his career. I mean, this includes his first 2 years. He averages 10 per. And if you take out, well, if you just make it the last three, it's 41 rushing touchdowns the last 3 years, almost 14 per season. 14 last year, 12 the year before, 15 the year before that. I have never wanted to bet the over on this. There's the injury thing, although he's been impervious to that so far. And then just sort of like the, let's be normal, let's just be people here. 11.5, 12 more rushing touchdowns again. And this is always, haven't really gotten too far into it, and I'm not sure I will today. But it's always an interesting topic these summers with Allen and rushing, and whether or not this year will be the year where they rein him in this way. I think they've certainly talked about it. New coach now, but they've certainly talked about doing it. Brandon Bean has talked about it. I think all else equal, everybody in the organization that matters would like to see those numbers come down just for his own sake, right? I mean, durability and the rest, he's everything to their chances. But it hasn't really happened yet. I think they've wanted to see it, and I think what's happened is they get to a point in their season and they feel like, well, this is it now, and there's no sliding anymore. There's no throwing the ball away anymore. We need this first down. We need this touchdown. And I think probably that would be their attitude again this year. Maybe not, but Allen hasn't sounded. It's the interview with Tyler Dunn I'm thinking of. You know, he had that comment to Tyler about, basically, in so many words, I'll play until I can't play the way I want to. Well, we know what that looks like. The way he plays, that's how he wants to play. And that includes, absolutely sometimes reckless approach with the ball. I mean, he's going. And maybe it's as simple as when he feels like he can't go like he used to be able to do, maybe that's it. But there's no sign at all that we're there yet. I just can't get to any quarterback, well, probably, try me, rushing for more, if anybody's going to do it, it's probably him, right? 11 and a half touchdowns. So I'm kind of like over on all the passing stuff with Allen. I doubt I'll actually play any of this, but maybe. Over on all the Allen passing stuff, tougher schedule, a new coach that maybe it'll be correct that he wants to open Allen up. He's got DJ Moore. If it's right that Brady has been held back in some ways by McDermott, well, okay, here's his chance to prove that he was. And there are people who think that that was the case. Again, talking with Matt Collar today, this came up, and he asked me, you know, a question kind of about Brady and what might be different about it. And I referenced how I always say the one thing, like every coach says they're going to be more aggressive, and, you know, nobody ever doesn't say that. So I mentioned that. I've mentioned how, I mean, you had people, I think maybe Sal, I'm not sure, but some of the inside voices are talking like they think Brady is held back fair to McDermott, like just sort of couldn't do everything he wanted to do. The implication seems to be that this is just going to be bigger, whatever that means on offense. That's probably more passing, but it's just going to be bigger. And I don't know. I feel like that's the message that if I were Brady or if I were the Bills, I would want out. And there's no evidence really of anything yet. So really, it's just talk. And, you know, if you're asking Brady himself, even off the record, about this kind of thing, I think that's what he's probably going to want you to know. Is that, yeah, like I want to do things a little bit differently, whatever that is. But we have no sign of it yet, and we may not until game start. Like even in the preseason, what kind of evidence will there be? Yesterday we talked about Brady some, and I got a call from a fan who's like, how can you believe in this guy? And I thought that was way too harsh because I think there are ways to do it. I said yesterday, and at the time he was promoted, I think it's kind of weird that they fired Sean McDermott for the sake of change and then promoted their offensive coordinator. Like, I did not expect that to happen after the McDermott move. But what, you know, what he's got in front of him, plus side, obviously, Allen, and he's been here. Like, he's familiar with what he's got, and they're familiar with him. He's even familiar with DJ Moore from Carolina. So there doesn't need to be any sort of ramping up period, I think, for their offense. But look at who he's going up against on the schedule this year, the Bills. Like, we've talked about the schedule, of course, and the challenges. The beginning is kind of a gauntlet. There's another one later on in the season. But think of it, or look at it in terms of coaches. D'Amico Ryan's okay. I mean, they've won that division two of the last 3 years. They've been a playoff team. He probably deserves some credit. And, you know, C.J. Stroud hasn't really been good at all for the last couple of years. I don't want to put D'Amico Ryans on the list of some of these other guys, but, you know, I think he's respectable. I think that's fair. Then you get Dan Campbell in week two, our king. Everything, like fourth downs, of course, all that stuff. But Campbell has fans in every corner. You know, he's got the nerds, he's got the jocks, he's got sort of everybody. You know, it's a bounce back year opportunity for them. They were down last year, but he's won a lot of games and has earned a lot of respect. Then you go to Jim Harbaugh in week three, whose teams are always good, with Mike McDaniel, by the way, and every fantasy show I'm on, people are gaga for the Chargers because of the players they have, and now Mike McDaniel. Then you go to Mike Vrabel, No kidding. Like, Mike Vrabel, coach of the year, defending coach of the year. You know all about him. That's week four. Then you go to Sean McVay. How about that stretch? Are they all coach of the year winners? I don't know if Campbell won, but Harbaugh's been to a Super Bowl. Vrabel, McVay, McVay's won. Like, you've got a pretty good run there. Clint Kubiak with the Raiders. People like his mind, his vision of offense. He's not deserving of being in this club yet, of course, but, you know, people tend to be optimistic about him. Baltimore's coach is new, Minter. Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota. Matt, by the way, I think called the Bills game in Minnesota the Vikings game of the year. Like, the best game on the Vikings schedule is the Bills game in week 9, Monday night in Minnesota. Aaron Glenn, Jeff Hafley. I mean, if the Bills are going to get there, you kind of think they might have to just sweep the Jets and Dolphins. The weakest games on their schedule would seem to have to be two Jets, two Dolphins, and then Raiders, and then I don't know after that. So you get your Jets, Dolphins back-to-back. They have that twice, the last two games of the year against those teams as well. Andy Reid, Thanksgiving. Vrabel again. Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. Something to be said for that guy. Been there a long time. Ben Johnson in Chicago. This is now, we're into Christmas time. Sean Payton again in Denver. And then the Dolphins and the Jets. So really it's, for me, more about the first 5 weeks and what Brady has in front of him. Just the teams and, you know, naturally it lines up. It's the coaches. DeMeco Ryans, Dan Campbell, Jim Harbaugh with Mike McDaniel, Mike Vrabel, Sean McVay. Brady's going to want to come out of the box pretty hot. And he's going to maybe have to, or the Bills are going to maybe have to hold their own against those teams. And I think if they don't, Brady is probably who we're talking about. Brady and Bean. It's not going to be Allen. Like, that's a tough start. Raiders away, break, and then the Ravens. Really interesting year. They all are. So, there are some of Josh Allen's stat lines for the year and some thoughts on the new head coach. Like I laid out before, Paul Hamilton coming up. We'll talk about the schedule announcements. The whole thing comes out tomorrow. It's been a long time since I've been this eager to see it, and I don't have tickets anymore. I'm just kind of in a, like a lot of you are going to be, sort of in a Sabres mood. So, we'll see what that looks like tonight or today. It was announced who they open with at home, Chicago, and then also that, because all the teams announce their home openers, they'll start the season as the road team for Columbus's season opener in Columbus, October 1st. So Paul coming up, Ryan Paganetti, Brian Koziol, maybe with Bulldog as well for the golf picks later on. Thanks for being with me. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Appreciate being reminded of that now that we know their first two games. I was sitting here thinking I would ask Paul to predict the outcomes, the scores even, of the October 1st game in Columbus and the October 3rd home opener against Chicago. But just to make sure, Paul, you're not going there, are you?
No, I'm not going there.
Too soon? Too early? maybe the day of, but probably not, right? We're not predicting hockey games. Fun to think of the Blackhawks for the opener, though, the home opener, right? I mean, that's happened a long time ago, but not a, you know, a conference opponent. And it's Bowen Byram on a Saturday night. You can start to look forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much finished the year in Chicago. Right at the end of the year. Now they're going to start the year, start the home part of the year against Chicago. So Bo Byram it'll be a homecoming right away for he and Jordan Greenway. So we'll see how he feels about training camp and his new team when he gets here, and see what the Sabres will be all about then, and see if what we're looking at now is what we'll be looking at that night, or will we be looking at some other things?
Right, Greenway too. Paul, how much do you think the Sabres will miss Byram?
Quite a bit. I mean, the thing is, to have a guy, I mean, he is talented, and he was basically your number three or four defenseman, probably number four once Power really started to come into his own last year. And that was no insult to Byram. It's just who Buffalo has. And that's one thing Kekalainen talked about in his press conference at the end of the year, how, you know, he felt they had the best four in the NHL, and I could make that argument too.
Yeah.
As far as that went. So then that's really one of the biggest reasons he wanted to leave. He didn't want to be a number three or four defenseman on a team. He wanted to be a number one defenseman. And that was not going to happen here. It wasn't going to happen in Colorado either for him with Makar. So now he's in a place where it is going to happen for him. And, you know, but he doesn't have a real good team around him. So I think his numbers aren't really going to come out real well unless the Blackhawks shock us and you know, become a very good team quickly. And, you know, he's got some suffering ahead of him right now.
He got that money, though, like you talked about.
He got money.
he got his number one defenseman money, for sure. I mean, he might be tops in the league now at the position.
No, I never would have dreamed that he would have been able to get that. And, yeah, Quinn Hughes will surpass that without question. So, especially with the salary cap going up as much as it has, which tells us the NHL is doing quite well because that means revenues are going up.
Yeah, how about that?
At a big pace for the salary cap to go up at the pace that it's going up.
You know, we're only in the middle of this sort of new, exciting period in their history. You don't know how long it'll last. Hopefully it's not already the end of it. But, you know, it's the beginning of a stretch here where you'd like to think, by their roster and the ages of their players, that they could sustain success for several years here. I wonder how Byram, if that happens, I wonder how Byram will be remembered as a Sabre, as a part of the, you know, the team where they popped it, where they broke through. Because he was no small part of that. I mean, he, like you talked about, he wasn't Dahlin either, but he wasn't insignificant to the story here.
And he had a rough start this year. I mean, a lot of people point to his numbers this year, and I think part of that is before December when they got hot. He wasn't very good. It wasn't going well for him. And then he got really good and played well, as did the rest of the team. And they all just kind of gelled where it almost didn't matter which defensive pair was on the ice. The Sabres were giving up very few scoring chances. They weren't turning the puck over, you know, to produce those scoring chances against their goaltenders. Their goaltenders were, you know, their save percentage was number two or three in the NHL last year. And a lot of that is because they cut way down on the types of scoring chances that they were allowing. And Byram was a big part of that. He played a lot of penalty kill for them and eventually wound up on the number two power play for power. I mean, let's just face it, as a young defenseman, the power play is not working for Owen Power in the National Hockey League. I'm not saying it never will, but it just wasn't. And they recognized that finally and pulled him off it and gave Byram an opportunity, which, if we're all being honest, I don't think went real well either. But he'll be on the number one power play, I'm sure, in Chicago.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. I'm Mike Shope, getting some hockey talk in. Bulldog is off this week. So we're just kind of like maybe now more back in our chairs with the idea of there being a big move coming from the Sabres. The farther we get into the summer, the less likely it would seem. But that doesn't have to be, you know, like it's not 0% or anything at this point. You know, thinking about Hellebuck again, Paul, and what the Sabres might have to give up to get him. Do you have an idea of like what you think he might take in a trade? Are we looking at three of these young pieces in your mind? Are we looking at even possibly the draft picks they just made? I don't know if it would ever get to that point, but what would you see a trade looking like?
Well, it sounds like, if reports are correct, and this would track with Kekalainen, it sounded like he just didn't want to give Winnipeg the fourth overall pick. It sounded like he wanted the eighth overall pick in return as part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Winnipeg was going to, no, that's not going to happen. And then, you know, Winnipeg, you know, went a little too far. I think Mertka fine, but, you know, we're not going to throw the number four pick and Hellenius in there. you know, type of a thing. And, you know, it was just a big ask. You know, Jack Quinn was involved in that also. And it was just a big ask. And to me, it just appeared that, all right, now they want Hellenius. Nah, you know what? No, this is going to have to come down a little bit before we're interested if you're the Sabres. Now, that doesn't mean they still won't talk about it. They probably have. It sounds like they have. And but if the price doesn't come down, I would be shocked if that trade is made, especially since Kekalainen has said more than once that his goaltending, he's happy with his goaltending. And he's even indicated a pretty good chance they will run back the three goaltenders that they had because he liked them. And I've said, and I'll say it again, it wouldn't shock me if there's an injury to Lucan in their line, if all of a sudden Ellis took the bull by the horns here and wound up in their net. I mean, that wouldn't shock me at all. There are a lot of folks who think highly of Colton Ellis. And so if he gets an opportunity like Bussey did this year in Carolina, and that's, I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, that makes me scratch my head, the reports that Carolina's in on Hellebuck. It's like, Bussey had a really, really good regular season. I mean, he came from nowhere off the waiver wire and played really, really well and put up really good numbers. And then when they needed him the most at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs, he was fantastic. So I'm kind of scratching. And then you signed him to a contract. So why would you be interested in Hellebuck? You just won the cup with what you have. That's strange to me. I don't know why they would have an interest in that. Give up assets to get something that, I don't know, I just don't feel they need.
Not to mention Freddie Anderson, who got them to the finals, basically, you know, with a dominant playoff season as well.
He's gone, but they still have Bussey and the Russian kid, who they're high on, you know, so they're still in the, you know, they had three goaltenders. And he got into a little bit of the playoffs once it was Bussey and him because they didn't dress Anderson as the backup because of his injury. So, I just wonder if that how accurate that report is because I don't understand if you're Carolina, why would you be in on this?
Your Ellis point is interesting. I mean, for all the time I've spent talking about just how random goaltending is in terms of predictability, there's a guy that they liked well enough to keep him around all season. It was somewhat controversial, at least for a while, they're doing that. And so, yeah, I mean, if he's somebody that they're right in terms of projecting his talent, I mean, he'd have to get a chance, which probably means something is going wrong, whether that's an injury or something else. Not necessarily for him to get that chance, but if he were to, I wouldn't assume that he couldn't play well.
And, Mike, I think more and more teams are going to do it. You know, go with three goaltenders because of the e-bug rule. You have to have the e-bug, but, you know, you can have three goaltenders, which means you can do what the Sabres did twice this year when one of their goaltenders got hurt. Lukanen did it once and Lyon did it once where they came down from the press box dressed. They couldn't sit on the bench, which I don't understand. Well, I don't know why they can't get on the bench, but they can't. But they can sit in the locker room ready to go if the goaltender that's in. That's the only way they can go in is if the second goaltender gets hurt, and then you can put him in. So they don't have to go to the e-bug, and I think more teams are going to do that now. From what I'm reading, we're going to see a lot more teams have three goaltenders because you don't want to get down to that e-bug, not that it happens all that often anyway. You're sure going to have one there for the visiting team. But, you know, if you've got your three goaltenders, so I think more are going to do it. And maybe the thing I liked about Ellis is he could sit there for a month and be ready to play. I mean, he would stay after practice and work on things that players wanted to work on or he wanted to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was long periods of time in between starts and he'd start and win the game, you know, and I thought, well, there's a kid that keeps himself ready and keeps himself ready to go, and this is his first NHL season. Then I see what Bussey does, and he came to Carolina the same exact way off waivers in the beginning of the year, and he got his opportunity, and look what happened. So, you know, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. All I'm saying is it wouldn't surprise me at all if it did.
What do you think about Quinn as a piece in a trade offer involving Hellebuck or I suppose anyone else? I mean, we'd all maybe have different rankings of the young players and just like how willing you might be or you think the Sabres might be in disposing them. None of that will be easy if it comes to it. Is Quinn, for me, is one of the more obvious ones where, I mean, I appreciate his talent, but I'd have an easier time letting go of him than certain others.
Absolutely. No, there's no question. I would get rid of him before Ostlund or Helenius or even some of the guys who we haven't even seen sign contracts yet. And Jerry Fortin said something the other day, which is very true. If you don't keep stocking the cupboards as you go along, it will hit you rather quickly. So, yeah, people say, well, you got a lot of these prospects where, well, yeah, you can use them for trades. You've got a lot of them, that, and we know they all can't be in Sabre uniforms, but you might need something at a trade deadline or now if there's a player. You know, let's say all of a sudden Dylan Larkin says he would come to Buffalo. Okay, it's going to take some of these guys then that you've got stocked in college hockey or up in junior or overseas or wherever they happen to be. And Jerry Fortin, he's very, very good at judging talent. And I found that out when he was an assistant coach at Niagara. And Niagara would wind up with players that I'm sitting there going, how is this player not at Wisconsin or North Dakota? You know, he would get these blue chip guys that you wonder how he got them. But, you know, and then Niagara would wind up in the NCAA tournament, or they would upset some. They had some pretty big upsets along the way back when I was doing hockey there, and Jerry Fortin was there. And he showed me how he really has a good eye for talent, and I think, you know, he's done that with the Sabres too and now is in charge of their drafts.
Steve Yzerman, Paul, sort of resigns. I mean, he's going up, not down, but that didn't work out, Detroit.
Yeah, I'm not kind of buying that. I'm. That is, in my estimation, this is my opinion, one of the best players in Detroit Red Wings history, and we're going to try to not embarrass him as much as we can. So let's call it a resignation or whatever. So, you know, if he doesn't have another job somewhere else, then we'll just use him as an advisor. But how much is he actually going to be advising? So. Yeah, that's just understanding what the type of player he is in Detroit Red Wings history, and we just don't want to throw him out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But the timing of it is interesting. I mean, you've let him go through the draft.
It's late.
And free agency and, you know, whatever trades might be there. And now the question in my mind is, does that change Dylan Larkin's mind at all? Because there was credible reporting out there that Dylan Larkin and Yzerman did not see eye to eye on things. And that was part of what this is about. So now that Steve Yzerman isn't in charge, is it possible Dylan Larkin might say, okay, he might wait to see who is in charge and say, you know what, maybe I like the direction this is headed in now and rescind the trade requests. So we'll see how this goes down and if it changes anything for Dylan Larkin.
Or perhaps Yzerman couldn't get him moved or wasn't willing, and we're going to have somebody else take the wheel on that. So we'll see.
Jason Botterill, he wasn't willing to purge his hockey department, and that cost him his job because it was just a month where Kim Pegula had said Jason Botterill was staying back. And everything, yeah. And I don't even think it was a month earlier. And the next thing you know, Terry Pegula and Kim Pegula are sitting at a press conference saying we do not believe we were being heard. And that's when Kevin Adams was hired, and he purged the hockey department. Now, I will give Kevin Adams credit. It was a huge – a lot of people lost their jobs. But Kevin Adams realized rather quickly we went too far. I mean, the guy that left today, Jeremiah Crow, he was in charge of amateur and pro scouting. That's too big of a job for one person. It just is, especially an inexperienced at the time person. And Kevin Adams realized that and said, we got to change this. I mean, we went too far here. We got to start getting some people back in the organization, and they did. So I'll give him credit for that, to realize that this went too far and convincing Terry Pegula that it went too far.
And now we have John Davidson, Paul.
Yeah, he's an advisor. It sounds like he has the same role with the Sabres as Kevin Adams has with the Bruins. So he's a senior advisor and somebody that Kekalainen is very familiar with in Columbus. And I'm I think Davidson might have been the one that fired Kekalainen, wasn't he?
Maybe. Yeah, they were there together for a bit, so maybe.
Which is, so maybe they're – well, not maybe. There are no hard feelings there. Otherwise, Kekalainen wouldn't have brought it in, brought him in, and maybe Kekalainen felt I didn't get the job done. So maybe, you know, he was well-founded to do it or whatever, but whatever – if there was any problem, it's been healed, and they are now together again.
Paul, stay indoors today.
I still have a lot of stuff to do outside. I may still get out there yet. I haven't been out there yet.
Okay.
So we'll see.
It's rebel.
Yeah, it's not. Like, I obviously see the smoke now, but I've never, like, smelled it or it's never bothered me, you know, when we've had this the past couple of years from the wildfires up in Canada. But my bushes look like nobody lives here, and my lawn's getting a little bit long. So, and I'm thinking the sun's not going to be beating on me, so maybe it's not as hot as it could be.
All right. Well, good luck out there, Paul, if you risk it out there. Thanks for your time today.
No problem. Nice talking to you. Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the West Shore Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. I'm not even sure the sun point holds. It might still be, I don't know. I'm going to say something and make it, it's going to sound like I really know this, but isn't it maybe one of those deals where the rays are still like reaching you, but you just can't see them or something? Are you still maybe at risk sun-wise? Anyway, I don't know. I'm just filling time. Ryan Paganetti coming up in 15 minutes here on WGR.